Palestinians hold a funeral for two young men killed by Israeli forces during a raid in the West Bank city of Nablus. At least two people are killed and a dozen others wounded in a terrorist attack in Syria's western province of Hama. Russia says the Odessa missile attack hit a Ukrainian military infrastructure after Kiev accused Moscow of failing to keep its promises. Thank you for joining us. Our top story tonight, thousands of Palestinians have attended a funeral procession for two Palestinians killed by Israeli forces. The two young men were killed in clashes following an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. The Palestinian Red Crescent has also reported 19 injuries, including 10 people hit by live fire. Palestinian reporters have described the raid as a full-blown military invasion. Israeli forces have also stormed the flashpoint city of Jenin. Hamas says the ongoing confrontations in the occupied West Bank prove that the Palestinian uprising will not stop until the end of the Israeli occupation. According to the movement, resistance across West Bank cities will not be broken. Israeli forces have killed at least 50 Palestinians in the occupied territories since late March. Well, to follow up on this news, we're going to have a special coverage, and we have our correspondents in Ramallah joining us, Mona Kendil and Mick Napier from Scottish Palestinian Solidarity Campaign from Edinburgh. Thank you to the both of you for joining us. Mona, I'll start with you. Can you please give us an update to the situation in the West Bank following the daily raids by the Israelis?
Well, we have to say that incursions and raids to Palestinian areas are carried out by the Israeli forces on a daily basis and even at night. What happened this early on Sunday, Israeli troops raided Nablus, northern the occupied West Bank, and the old town of Nablus. They also stormed the neighborhood known as a Yasmin neighborhood. The Israeli military claimed that they raided Nablus area in order to arrest Palestinians who are accused of being wanted for security reasons, or Palestinian fighters who are known for taking part in anti-Israel operations or even different forms of activities, and even firing against Israeli settlements. During this operation, Israeli troops surrounded a house owned by one of those Palestinian martyrs. Clashes took place between the Israeli forces and the Palestinians who were inside the house. Later, Israeli troops fired missiles and explosives against this house. At the end of the day, they unfortunately assassinated two Palestinians, Muhammad Azizi, 25 years old, and Abdurrahman Subah, 28 years old. According to Fatah's armed wing, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, they said that the two were members of its group. The Israelis said that the man whom they were looking for, they couldn't arrest him. But later, during the funeral processions, it was clear that this Palestinian man, Ibrahim al-Nabulsi, was among those mourners holding his rifle and taking part in the funeral processions, expressing his anger and, of course, paying farewell to his fellows, the two Palestinian martyrs.
Thank you, Mona. Please stay with us. I'll have another question for you later on. First of all, Mick, I'm going to move over to you. What's your take? Because the Palestinian groups criticize the Western governments for their double standards in dealing with the Israeli conflicts and the raids in Palestine, in occupied Palestine. Do you believe that the behavior by the Western governments has emboldened the Israeli raids, and do you think that this is going to continue as it has over the past few months?
Well, yes, the Israelis are very attuned to the messages, the signals they get back from the Western chancelleries. It's not that they always jump to attention, but they're very keen not to go too far in what they're doing in Palestine. The Israeli killing rate in the first, so far during 2022 is five times what it was in the same period last year. The Israelis, you know, have waves of killing, waves of mass incarceration. They have different types of pressure to try to drive Palestinians out of Palestine, but it comes in waves. And at the moment, there is a peak in the rate of killing. I saw, by the way, just to give a sense of proportion, that in the months of the Ukraine war, the government there has claimed how barbaric the Russians are by saying that 243 Ukrainian children have been killed in the five months, I think, of this war. Israel killed twice as many in the same number of weeks, pretty much, during the last invasion of Gaza. Twice as many. So Israel gets a license to kill which is not extended to very many other groups. Yes, Western governments know exactly what's going on. During the killing, they often give Israel a green light, talking about how reserved and how moderate Israel is under pressure from these extremist Palestinians. After the killing, there are investigations by Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, the United Nations, etc., etc. And they always conclude that Israel is guilty of indiscriminate killing of Palestinians. Now, this was targeted at resistance fighters, although when they cannot find one, then they'll just kill somebody else in the family or somebody in the neighborhood. But whether it's targeted at resistance, at members of the resistance, or simply indiscriminate killing, Israel has been doing this for a very, very long time. And yes, there's no doubt that the green light from Western chancelleries, Biden was in Israel, Palestine a couple of days ago, and clearly the Israelis did not get a sense from him that they have to reduce the killing. They must have had a green light in order to continue like this. But also, when they have so-called security cooperation with the United Arab Emirates and various other Arab governments who are trading with Israel on the technology used to crush the Palestinians, this gives them a sense of impunity that they can do pretty much what they want. But, you know, it cannot really be any other way, because we can't just look at this. But it's not just two sides fighting. The aim of the Israelis is to drive all Palestinians out of Palestine. The aim of the Palestinians is to remain there and not to be driven out. So the killing is essential for the Israelis in order to drive those Palestinians out, because they will not go willingly. And the killing has to be seen as part of their toolbox. It's an important tool, but they also have mass incarceration, poisoning Palestinians' land with sewage from settlements. They have a full spectrum of crimes that they can commit against the Palestinians, but the killing is certainly an important part of this.
Very well. Thanks to the both of you, Mona Kandil in Ramallah, and Mick Napier, Scottish-Palestinian Solidarity Campaign from Edinburgh. Thanks to the both of you for joining us. Moving on with the rest of the news, a day after the arrest of a spy network in Iran, the intelligence ministry has released new details about the group, which it says was linked to the Israeli spy agency Mossad. The ministry says the team had planned terrorist and sabotage operations in several sensitive locations, including a center in Isfahan province. It says the network's elements had received training for months in an African country and entered Iran through Iraq's Kurdistan region. They possess advanced equipment and powerful explosives. The Iranian intelligence ministry says the team had placed their explosives in their targeted area and was arrested hours before completing their terrorist operation. Two people have been killed in a terrorist attack in western Syria. The attack, which targeted a religious ceremony, also left a dozen people wounded. Here's our correspondent, Mohammed Ali, with more details.
What happened was that there was a terrorist attack on a village called Al-Suqailbiya, which is west of Hama and Hama countryside. The result was that two people were killed and 12 others were injured. They were taken to the National Hospital of Al-Suqailbiya. The attack targeted a gathering, a religious ceremony. There was an inauguration of a church over there, and there were a lot of civilians over there, women, children, over there attending that ceremony. So two people were killed over there as a result of this attack. Reports say that terrorists launched the attack from the area that they control, which is Idlib, which is controlled, of course, by the so-called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, previously known as the Al-Nusra Front over there. Reports also say, according to civilians in that area, that the terrorists used this time drones to attack that area. This is not the only attack that happened. Also, terrorists from Idlib targeted with mortar shells areas around Khan Sheikhoun in Idlib's southern countryside, which is a government-held area. Those mortars caused fire to break out in the farms around Khan Sheikhoun, but no one was injured or killed as a result of that attack.
More news from Syria, where the Turkish military has conducted heavy shelling on two areas in the north and west, causing casualties and material damage. According to reports, the mortar and artillery fire in Zaghan district have left one civilian dead and four others injured. Separate attacks also hit sites in Al-Tamr in the western province of Hasaka, including near a Russian base. Military sources are saying that there have been 80 Turkish attacks in less than an hour. On Thursday, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan renewed his threat to launch a military operation in Syria, allegedly to stem anti-Ankara terrorists. Damascus views Turkey's operations as a violation of its sovereignty. Russia's foreign ministry says its Saturday attack on the southern Ukrainian port city of Odessa hit a military infrastructure. According to spokeswoman Maria Zakharova, a naval boat was among the targets hit in what she described as a high-precision strike. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Russia of breaking its promise to implement a grain deal. With the attack on the port, Odessa is a key Black Sea terminal for the export of Ukrainian grain. The attack came less than 24 hours after Russia and Ukraine agreed with the United Nations and Turkey on reopening the Black Sea ports for grain exports. France says it will press ahead with growth-stifling austerity measures following it downgrading its economic outlook. Fears are growing more in Europe's second-largest economy, as many say the Eurozone is headed into recession amid record high inflation and energy uncertainty. Ramin Mazohari reports from Paris.
Evidence continues to mount that Europe's sanctions campaign against Russia is exacerbating the euro currency's persistent and perhaps structural economic troubles. France's finance minister just released a depressing outlook. This year's economic growth will be cut almost in half and remain between just 1.4 and 1.8% until at least 2028. The Eurozone's second largest economy now looks too weak to drive what many have long called the world's most unstable macroeconomic bloc. From 2008 to 2017, the Eurozone's average annual economic growth was just 0.6%. From 2018 through 2021, the growth rate was even worse, just 0.5%, putting the Eurozone on track for a second consecutive lost decade. Despite the clear failure of austerity policies in producing growth, President Emmanuel Macron will continue with far-right economics in his second term. His finance minister boasted of plans to cut much-needed public spending to a 20-year low, citing a desire to submit to Brussels' entirely arbitrary 3% rule on public deficits.
We're talking about a systemic crisis in Europe, and one which existed before the crisis caused by the pandemic, as well as the crisis caused by the need to find alternative energy sources other than Russia. What it all adds up to is that a state of crisis continuing still.
This week, the new and deeply fractured National Assembly passed the Emergency Purchasing Power Bill, aimed at countering still rising once-in-a-generation inflation. At just 20 billion euros, it has been widely criticized as an ineffective and even superficial measure.
For many people, this bill is insufficient in comparison with the scope of the crisis. The same criticism has been made of a government fuel rebate of 18 cents, which began in April. However, it is 20 billion euros which will help the poorest level of society and students deal with the effects of high inflation.
France's government claims that upcoming austerity rollbacks planned for the pension and unemployment system will actually produce broad economic growth this time. The European Central Bank is raising interest rates, even though the Eurozone is already on the brink of recession. Sanctions and not diplomacy continues to be the destabilizing Western choice regarding Ukraine. The long-term economic outlook for France and the Eurozone appears bleak to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Over to The Hague now, where the International Court of Justice is set to proceed with a case concerning accusations of genocide against minority Rohingya Muslims. The United Nations' highest court has thrown out all of the objections by Myanmar's military to a case filed by the Gambia. The junta said the court has no jurisdiction in the matter. Rights groups have hailed the ICJ's decision as a great moment for justice for Rohingya. They say there is now a possibility to challenge the military's impunity. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya fled majority Buddhist Myanmar in 2017 amid harrowing reports of murder, rape and arson. In a provisional decision 2 years ago, the court ordered Myanmar to protect the Rohingya from genocide. Three people have been killed and two more wounded in a university shooting in the Philippines capital, Manila. It happened as law students and their families arrived for a graduation ceremony. Those killed included a former mayor of Lamitan town. The suspect was also injured in a shootout with a campus security officer and is now in custody. Still no word on his motive, but a police officer says the suspect had a long-running dispute with the slain mayor. President Ferdinand Marcos said he was shocked and promised to investigate the attack. School and university shootings are very rare in Philippines despite its lax gun rules. Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. English Radio.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. وأنت تعلم ضعفي عن قليل من بلاء الدنيا وعقوباتها وما يجري فيها من المكاري على أهلها على أن ذلك بلاء ومكروه قليل مكثوه يسير بقاؤه قصير مدته. Brothers and sisters, we have reached this excerpt of the Kumail supplication. وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ ضَعْفِي أَنْ قَلِيلٍ مِّنْ بَلَاءِ الدُّنْيَا وَعُقُوبَاتِهَا. And you know my weakness before a little of this world's tribulations and punishments. وَمَا يَجْرِي فِيهَا مِنَ الْمَكَارِهِ عَلَىٰ أَهْلِهَا. And before those ordeals which befall its dwellers. عَلَىٰ أَنَّ ذَلِكَ بَلَاءٌ وَمَكْرُوهٌ قَلِيلٌ مَكْثُ. Even though it's a tribulation and ordeal whose stay is short. قَسِيرٌ مُدَّتُ, whose subsistence is but little. فَكَيْفَ احْتِمَالِي لِبَلَاءِ الْآخِرَةِ وَجَلِيلِ وُقُوعِ الْمَكَارِهِ فِيهَا. So how can I endure the tribulation of the next world and the real ordeals that occur within it? وَهُوَ بَلَاءٌ تَطُولُ مُدَّتُ وَيَدُومُ مَقَامُهُ. Because it is a tribulation whose period is long and whose station endures. In this part of the Kumail supplication, Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about the difference between the tribulation of this world and that of the hereafter. The tribulation of this world, as stated by Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam, is so different from that of hereafter in several ways. First, the hardships of this world, such as the storms, the earthquakes, the floods, the famine, the expensiveness of the goods, loneliness, and the diseases that bothers human, has a short stay. They have a really fleeting period. But human tribulations in the last day have a long stay. They have enduring stations. And the second aspect the tribulation of this world differs from that of the hereafter is that some worldly challenges and problems are a form of divine trials. If human is patient in these difficulties, if the human beings can maintain their belief within these problems, within these tribulations, they will be greatly rewarded and they will be subjected to Allah's satisfaction. By the same token, the prophets were patient with the torturing of their people. Also, some of the Allah's best friends, like Asiya, the Pharaoh's wife, and Habib al-Najjar had tribulations in his way and by his will. But the tribulation of the last day is merely the chastisement of human sins and disobediences in this world. We'll be back, dear listeners, after a short break.
Oh, generous one, oh Lord, you are aware of my weakness to bear even a minor affliction of this world and its consequence and adversity, although such afflictions are momentary, short-lived and transient. How then can I bear the retributions and the punishments of the hereafter, which are enormous and of intensive sufferings, of prolonged period and perpetual duration, and which shall never be alleviated for those who deserve the same, as those retributions will be the result of your wrath?
Thank you, Allah. so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of Dua.
So these are the two differences between the tribulations of this world and hereafter. The hardships of this world are having a fleeting period. They have a short stay, but on the last day, they have a long stay. They have enduring stations. And the second point about the tribulations of this world is that some of them are the divine trials, and the tribulations of the last day are the chastisements of the human beings and their disobediences of this world. Now, the Holy Quran considers Allah's accompanying human a result of obeying Him, subhanahu wa ta'ala, a result of obeying the Prophet and being patient with the committing sins. This verse of the Holy Quran says, وَأَطِيعُوا اللَّهَ وَرَسُولَهُ وَلَا تَنَازَعُوا فَتَفْشَلُوا وَتَذْهَبَ رِيحُكُمْ. And obey Allah and His Messenger. Do not quarrel, for then you will be weak in heart and your power will depart. وَاصْبِرُوا إِنَّ اللَّهَ مَعَ الصَّابِرِينَ. And be patient, surely Allah is with the patient. This is the importance of obeying Allah. Among the conditions for acceptance of a prayer is abstinence from sins, and of course repeating of them if one committed them. This is what this verse is suggesting: obey Allah and His Messenger. And committing sins is a kind of disobedience. Let us end our discussion in this regard with a tradition from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, who says, it so happens that a person asks Allah for a need, and He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, decides to fulfill it sooner or later, but the person commits a sin during this time. So Allah the Exalted says to the angel, do not grant his need and deprive him of it, because he has exposed himself to my wrath and deserves to be deprived by me. If the human being recognizes the kind of chastisement waiting for him in hereafter, فَكَيْفَ احْتِمَالِ لِبَلَاءِ الْآخِرَةِ وَجَلِيلَ وُقُوعِ الْمَكَارِهِ فِيهَا, Imam alayhi salam says, he will never let himself commit these sins again. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode of the program. We ask the Almighty Allah to sit us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through half my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me.
In the limelight.
congressional committee has heard former U.S. President Donald Trump pressured his vice president Mike Pence to overturn the 2020 election, despite having been told repeatedly that doing so would be illegal. We are prepared for an article written jointly by Patricia Zengerler and Richard Cowan. The piece is titled U.S. House Panel Hears Trump Pressured Pence to Overturn His 2020 Election Defeat. Aides to Mike Pence told the Congressional Committee investigating the 6th of January 2021 protest march on the Capitol, when thousands of people marched against the certification of the November 2020 election, which placed Joe Biden in office as the current U.S. president, former U.S. President Donald Trump pressured his vice president to overturn his 2020 election defeat. According to a Reuters news agency, members of the Democratic-led House of Representatives Select Committee said recently that Trump continued his pressure campaign despite being told repeatedly it was illegal to do so, as Mike Pence and lawmakers met to formally certify Joe Biden's victory. The 9-member Select Committee's public hearings, launched recently, intends to put up a case against Donald Trump that he was responsible for the 6th of January 2021 violence, starting with knowingly spreading lies around the election, seeking to overturn the election results, assembling the mob in the Capitol, and failing to act to stop the violence. The committee is trying to build a case that Trump's efforts to overturn his defeat amounted to illegal conduct, far beyond normal politics. Mike Pence has criticized Trump's earlier complaints about his handling of the 6th of January joint session, which, as a part of the regular legal process of validating presidential elections, was convened to certify the legitimacy of the Electoral College votes of the various states. Donald Trump has repeatedly denied wrongdoing while maintaining that he lost the election only because of widespread fraud that benefited the Democrat Joe Biden. Trump and his supporters denounced the 6th of January panel as a political witch hunt. Trump claimed that he won the 2020 presidential election and that there was massive voter fraud. The former president claimed that he ordered 10,000 National Guard troops to protect the Capitol building. The certification vote on 6th of January 2021 had become a focus for Donald Trump. On 6th of January 2021, Trump supporters occupied the U.S. Capitol while lawmakers were in the process of reviewing the certification of state electors, which indicated Joe Biden's victory. Some Trump supporters had hoped that this process could have resulted in some of the electors being disqualified, thus overturning the outcome of the presidential election. It is claimed by some that the demonstrators were infiltrated and incited by provocateurs from U.S. intelligence agencies who orchestrated the false flag operation in order to get rid of Donald Trump. Some among the crowd clashed with police officers and some made threats to beat up a number of Democratic lawmakers. Some also inflicted damage on parts of the Capitol building. Mark Short, who was Mike Pence's chief of staff, claimed in videotape testimony that Pence told Trump many times that he did not have the authority to stop the vote certification in Congress. Gregory Jacob, an attorney for Mike Pence, said the main proponent of that theory, attorney John Eastman, admitted in front of the president 2 days before the January 6 attack on the Capitol that his plan to have Mike Pence halt the procedure would violate the law. John Eastman had argued that Mike Pence could reject results from certain states if he thought they were illegitimate, giving Republicans in those states an opportunity to declare Donald Trump the victor despite the actual vote count. Advisors to Mike Pence told the committee that the idea had no basis in law. We'll be right back. Former U.S. Appeals Court Judge J. Michael Luttig, an informal Mike Pence advisor, said it is breathtaking that these arguments even were conceived, let alone entertained by the President of the United States. Committee members and witnesses warned that Donald Trump, who is widely expected to run for president again in 2024, would not accept defeat no matter the actual outcome. Former U.S. Appeals Court Judge Michael Luttig said, today, almost 2 years after a fateful day in January of 2021, that still Donald Trump and his allies and supporters are a clear and present danger to American democracy. The committee showed several chilling clips of some of the thousands of Trump supporters who descended on the Capitol building, chanting for Mike Pence to be pulled out of the building or hanged. Trump tweeted at 24 minutes past 2 in the afternoon local time, while the protest was going on, that Mike Pence did not have the courage to stop the vote count. Sarah Matthews, a Trump White House staffer, said in a video testimony it felt like he was pouring gasoline on the fire by tweeting that. Donald Trump accused Mike Pence of having acted as an automatic conveyor belt for the old crow, Mitch McConnell, to get Biden elected president as quickly as possible. He was referring to the fact that when the proceedings were interrupted for more than 10 hours by the breach of the Capitol, the detailed challenges that many expected would be presented of fraud, ballot stuffing, and violations of Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution in Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin were given short shrift in deference to what a number of senior congressional officials termed the assault on American democracy, represented by what was already being called, both in Congress and on television, the insurrection. Donald Trump maintains that rather than allowing the proceedings to descend into an emotional morass which prejudiced the outcome and dismissed the many valid issues raised about the election without a proper hearing, Mike Pence should have provided an atmosphere for those many members of both houses who had announced their intention to bring the challengers to do so in a professional and secure environment with confidence that the proceedings would be conducted in a fair and objective manner. Mike Pence answered Donald Trump's criticism by saying that he had no right to overturn the results of the presidential election. Speaking to the Conservative Federalist Society in early February, the former vice president said some Republicans believe that as the presiding officer over the joint session of Congress, I possess unilateral authority to reject Electoral College votes. And I heard recently President Trump said I had the right to overturn the election. President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election. Although Trump had used the words overturn the election in a public statement, he was referring to the challenges to the vote counts that many expected would be presented in the half dozen or so swing states referenced earlier. These included a constitutional challenge arising as a consequence of various procedural changes which had been made in the months leading up to the election, and which allowed several million voters to use mail-in ballots for the first time. The joint session, that is, the convening of both houses of Congress in one session, is held on 6th of January following the presidential elections. The House and the Senate jointly convene, and the Electoral College results of each state are presented in the alphabetical order of the names of the individual states for certification by the Vice President, who presides over the proceedings. As the vote counts are presented, the Vice President asks the assembled Congress if there are any objections to the certification of that state's vote. If there are no objections, the certification is presumptively granted. However, if an objection is raised by a member of the House, and if it is joined by a member of the Senate, then the two houses retire to their respective chambers, where the challenge is presented in the form of a trial. If each house sustains the objection, the vote is denied certification and is not counted in the totals. There had been allegations raised in a number of the swing states, including Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, and Nevada, of various types of outright fraud. There was also a claim, a strong one, that for some reason no court had touched the merits of, alleging that recent changes in election practice were done without enabling legislation by the state legislatures, and that therefore the votes that followed from these changes, including a huge and decisive number of newly authorized mail-in ballots, were void, as being in violation of Article 2, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution. That section says, each state shall appoint, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct, a number of electors. If those challenges prevailed, there were enough votes in enough swing states which fell into the latter category to hand the election to Donald Trump. The first challenge was raised prior to the Capitol breach in the third state to be offered for certification, that is Arizona. This prompted the two houses to retire to their individual chambers to examine the evidence supporting the claims of irregularity that were to be raised. It was when these sessions were convened that the Capitol's security was breached and portions of the building were temporarily occupied. Each of the Senate and the House sessions bore the heavy imprint of the protesters' intrusion, and much of the debate was focused not on the facts and law relevant to the claim, but instead on what was already being termed the insurgency. Upon the return of the joint session, most of the remaining challenges were deferred in favor of a showing of unity against the Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, a day of infamy, newly added to a short list that included Pearl Harbor and 9/11, where the temple to democracy was desecrated. Had the challenges in two or three of the six swing states been sustained, the outcome of the election would have been changed in favor of Donald Trump.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, dear listeners. My name is Hussein Hinzano, and you're listening to A to Z program from IRB English Radio. Now, today, we're talking about the principles of friendship. The main point that we're talking in this particular program today is how to be a successful friend. Now, friendship doesn't need us to be selfish. We need to be good people. We need to be the kinds of people who love things for others that we love ourselves. If you like something for yourself, make sure you like the same thing to be for your friend, to be for the person that you consider as your partner. Now, the teachings that we get from the Quran, from the Prophet, from the progeny of the Prophet, the people of the house of the Prophet, the progeny, the 12 Imams, the teachings and guidance show us that a selfish person will never attract friends towards himself. And even if he gets them, even if he attracts them, he will lose them quickly due to his selfishness, because he doesn't like for them what he likes for himself, and doesn't hate for them what he hates for himself. Rather, he behaves with selfishness and tries to use them for his own personal interest. Thus, they run away from him. The friends definitely are going to run away from him. Why? Because he's selfish. He's not considering that whatever I like for myself is the same thing this particular partner of mine would like. If I like to play football in my life during this particular period of time, then the same thing means that my friend, my partner, the person I consider my friend, would like to play football at the same exact time. So I should like for myself what I like for him. If I see that playing football during this particular period is a good thing, then I would advise him, hey, my friend, please come play with me during this particular period of time. Why? Because it's healthy, because it will make you, you know, be a healthy person in life. It will make you be a strong person physically and mentally. So you advise them, you bring them closer to you. You stop being selfish. You give them what you like, because whatever you like is what they will like. If you like a certain kind of foods and snacks, make sure whenever you find time and space and you have like enough money to buy for them, buy for them. You have enough time to bring them to like your trips, to bring them to through the park or anything. Bring them to the park. Spend time with them. That's the best way of you to build up your friendship. And that is among the best way for you to be a successful friend.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from IRB English Radio. We've been talking about the principles of friendship. Now, in the past few minutes, we've been talking about how to be a successful friend. And we say that among the best way of you to being a successful friend is to not be selfish. Try and like for yourself what you like for others. No, try and like for others what you like for yourself. As a good friend, you need to make sure that if I like this particular thing, I need to make sure that the same thing I would want it to be for my friend also, and not the other ways. So, among the main points that we are trying to highlight here is that all the sacrifices that you are making, you should make them for the sake of your friends. You should make them for the sake of the people you're living with. Why? Because then these people will love you sincerely, and they will sacrifice all that has for your sake. they will respect your, they respect the feelings you're showing them, and the friendship will increase. Therefore, for you to get friends, in order for you to get friends, to get good people to live with, and to build up a successful relationship of friendship, you must not show selfishness toward your friends. Rather, associate them with good manners and sacrifice. And when we are talking about sacrifice, we mean to present the interest of others over your own. Whenever you feel they are in need of such interest, the Holy Quran outlines the sacrifices made by the righteous companions of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. Between themselves as brothers, they lived, the companions of the Prophet that is, they lived in a sincere friendship. For example, the Ansar, the people of Medina, sacrificed and presented all of what the Muhajirun, or the people of Mecca, needed, like shelter. They provided them with shelter, with food, with wives, with clothes, and money and everything. All this is a show of friendship, show of love, and this is among the best traits, the best commodities that we could use to build up a good relationship and a good friendship and to be successful friends. Dear listeners, thank you so much for listening to this. Till next episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en-islam-page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.